everybody. Thank you all for being here on such a yucky weather night. I really appreciate your making the effort to come here. It's still a few minutes before 7 o'clock, so we're not going to start with the class right yet. But I thought, you know, why waste the time just being here and waiting for 7 o'clock to come when I can use this time to maybe explain something that you might have a question about. And one thing that maybe some of you already know about, but some of you may not, something that's everywhere around here is prayer wheels. Who here is familiar with what a prayer wheel is? So there's a couple of people, right? Prayer wheels are everywhere, and I really wanted you to understand what they are because I think they're a really beautiful thing. Prayer wheels can come in any size. I have a little teensy one around my neck. They can be this size. There's quite a few outside, all in a row. You'll see them. If you see pictures of India, Tibet, Nepal, you'll see gigantic room-sized ones. So they can be really any size, but the shape obviously has to be the same because they're cylinders. They have to turn. And what they all have in common is that they all will have around the outside of them, either written once in large lettering or many, many, many times in smaller lettering, they'll all have the mantra of compassion, Om Mani Padme Hum, on the outside. And they are always filled with scrolls that have that prayer written on it many, many, many times. It's just filled. So essentially, you've got just this big block of the prayer of Om Mani Padme Hum, which is the prayer of compassion. Now, what does Om Mani Padme Hum mean? There are many, many, many explanations, and it's said that you could fill a book, 1,000 pages, with the explanation, because many of the mantras and many of our prayers are really sort of like poetry. You know, her eyes are as blue as the beautiful blooms or something, you know. You could deconstruct it, you know, you take each word and you can expand what it might mean, and it just gives you an overall message, okay? So our teacher, Geshe Gelug, has explained what Om Mani Padme Hum means in different ways. One way he explained it is, first of all, it's called a six-syllable mantra, Om Mani Padme Hum. Okay, it's six syllables. And he said each of the syllables can mean each of the six perfections of patience, generosity, concentration, and you know, some others. But one of the explanations that meant the most to me personally is one that he gave a few years ago, where Om is, when you say Om, in a way it's one syllable, but like saying y'all in the South, you can stretch it out to be more than one sound, and Om can be stretched out to be the Om, kind of like a three sounds blended in one syllable, and it represents body, speech, and mind. Mani is a term that can mean a perfect compassion. Padme, P-A-D-M-E, in our English translation, means a lotus. And the lotus, as you can probably tell, is a very important symbol in Buddhism. Whenever you see the Buddha, see these things over here? These are lotus petals. So you'll see, everywhere you'll see lotus symbols. Many of our depictions of the deities are sitting on the lotus. And the lotus is a very important symbol of wisdom growing out of the ignorance of mud. Okay, so you picture a lotus, it has its roots in the mud, goes up through the water till it comes above, clear and clean. So it's a symbol of wisdom growing out of ignorance. And then whom can be loosely translated as that's the way it is, or amen, or that's how it should be. So you put it together and you can loosely say it's something like, I desire or I aspire for to use my body, speech, and mind to achieve perfect compassion and wisdom. And let that be the way it is. Something like that. That's the interpretation that I've used, and I hope it's correct. And so, with this thought of knowing that this is a prayer of love and compassion and wisdom, when we spin it, we always spin it clockwise and use it like anything else in this room. Everything that you see is nothing but a tool to help your mind. Nothing in here is magic in itself, ever, ever. But it's an important tool that reminds you to think, as you spin the wheel, that you are spinning thoughts of love and compassion to every sentient being in this whole universe and beyond, right down to the ants and the little bugs, dust mites. So you're just swinging out positive thoughts all around the universe. And that's why I really love the prayer wheels. And I just wanted to share that with you. Okay, so, well, now it's 7:05. So welcome, everybody. Thank you all so much for making the effort to be here tonight on this yucky, cold, rainy night. And I appreciate your presence here. So tonight we start out, there are a few people here that are new. How many people have not been here before? There's three. How many were here for all three sessions? For most of you. Okay, very good. So my name is Elise Strievel, and I'm the outreach coordinator here at Kadampa Center. So if you have any questions, I'm here after the class. But at any time, you could always email me questions at outreach@kadampa-center.org. Okay, so don't hesitate to do that. Let's start with setting our intention. We all could have been somewhere else tonight, and instead we all chose to make this effort to be here to try and learn something to give us a little bit more peace in our minds and our hearts so that we can make the world a better place, starting with ourselves. So thank you for being here. Now we're going to start out with a little bit of meditation review. And I'm probably going to be doing something that always irritates me when I'm sitting in your chairs and doing some talking during the meditation time. But I want, obviously, we're here together to talk through what the meditation means. So you'll have a little bit of time to, few moments to meditate on your own, but I may interrupt your concentration by talking so that you can take some information with you at home. As we said before, meditation means to become familiar with. And it's to become familiar with your mind, to become familiar with ideas that can transform your mind, to become familiar with positive thoughts that bring your mind to peace. Everything that we encourage people to do here through the Kadampa Center is done for a reason. There are specific reasons why there is a specific meditation pose that is recommended. It's not just because it's the way it's done. It's been done for over 2,500 years because people who have done it for a long time have come to realize the benefits of the particular position. So the 7-point meditation posture is so that long after you've been, once you've started learning to meditate and you strive to meditate for longer periods or more frequent periods of time, you are in a position in which your body can support itself to be comfortable and stable. Because when your body is comfortable and stable, your mind can become comfortable and stable as well. So first we start with the feet. If you're sitting in a chair, be sure your feet can be flat on the floor. Use a cushion if needed. Just drag a cushion over. Got short legs like I do. I always have to use a cushion on the floor. Because you shouldn't have your legs straining to try to reach the floor. Your back should be very straight. Now, Western chairs are not conducive to a straight posture. They're conducive to slumping and slouching. So if you're at home sitting in a chair, it should be a straight chair, and you might want to use something even as small as a towel to try to raise your hips a little bit so that you can let your spine just stack on itself, because our skeletons, when you are in the proper posture, are made to relax into a supportive position. So back straight. Hands, left hand with the right hand, left hand cupped with the right hand on top of it. Thumbs touching at about your waist. You can rest them lightly on your thighs or hold them around your navel. Arms out a little bit so that the air can flow under. Your head very slightly tilted, but you don't want it too far back because that's too uncomfortable long term, and gravity will want to pull you backward and they'll keep you too alert to the outside. And if it's too far forward, you'll want to slump forward, and that makes you want to kind of go to sleep. So you want your head just very slightly tilted. Your eyes, ideally long-term, will be just very slightly cracked so that there's some light coming through, but not focused on anything, so that you're not tempted to close them all the way and fall asleep, or not so wide open that you're distracted by the surroundings. But at first, it might be hard to do that, so it's okay to close them lightly. Your jaw should be relaxed, and your tongue should be at the roof of your mouth, just behind your teeth, and that helps to keep your mouth from getting dried out. So then we start with, from the beginning, start with a body scan. And this body scan helps you to pull yourself in from the outside world to come and be right where you are right now. So just think, a few minutes ago you were in a car driving toward the center, got here, parked, got out, walked in here. You're sitting in a space. Think of your head is sitting on your shoulders, nice and straight back. You're seated, you can feel yourself rooted to the chair that you're in or the cushion. Pull your mind in, you're here. The next thing, we want to try and focus ourselves inside of ourselves. So we'll do a counting meditation to 10. Now, when you're counting, what you're doing is focusing your mind, putting your mind in a neutral place. When you are angry or feeling an impulse to do something, it's always a good idea to count. You've all known that. They say count to 10 if you're feeling angry. Well, why is that? It's because counting slowly helps to bring you to a neutral place. And from a neutral place, it's much easier to get to a positive. You count your breaths on the inhale. When you breathe in, that's 1. Now, why do we count on the inhale and not the exhale? My experience is that if you count on the exhale, we are used to saying our words. The way we speak is usually making sounds on an exhale. And it's very natural to say, one, two. And if you do that, when I have done it that way, I've found it's really easy for me to just let my autopilot start the counting and my mind can wander everywhere. But it takes a little bit more concentration to make the count on the inhale. And it helps you to focus better. So count to 10 on the inhale for 10. Okay. I hope that was helpful to center yourself. So, we've talked about a meditation that helps to, the body scanning helps to bring you here. The breathing helps to center you. Now, sometimes we have a real problem with the perseverative thoughts. Maybe something made you really angry during the day, or there's something that you did or something somebody else did or said that just gets stuck in your head, and you just keep playing that record over and over again. It's driving you crazy. It's just stuck. What can we do to help clear that out? Well, there is a meditation that Geshe-la has taught us called 9-round breathing. And he explains that inside of ourselves, we have many channels. I'm not very good at remembering numbers. They're like 72,000 or 84,000, many, many thousands of channels running all through our system, okay? Now, every thought is a little piece of energy that's flowing all the way through. Now, when we have some negative thoughts, they kind of block some of those channels. They kind of get stuck in there. So that's part of why that negative thought just keeps playing its record over and over again. It's just kind of plugging up one of your channels. So how can we free those channels to help dissolve that clot? That's a nursing reference, which I used to be, so I think of Coumadin here. All right, so 9-round breathing. I'll explain what it is, and then we'll do one together. You start with the ring finger of your left hand. Now, why the ring finger? Well, it is said that, first of all, it's the cleanest finger. Okay, it's just little information here. Geshe-la says that when you're in the womb, it's the finger that's in your nostrils before you're born to kind of hold them closed. I thought that was kind of interesting. And another possible explanation is it's said to have a connection to the heart chakra, which is why we put our wedding rings on that finger. But for whatever, I'm not sure that any of those explanations are fact, but I thought they were helpful. So we start with a ring finger of the left hand, and you're going to block your left nostril and breathe in. Then you move that finger to the other side and breathe out the left side. So block the left nostril and breathe in with the right. Block the right nostril and breathe out on the left. I'm going to do that one more time. So that's three. And then you take the ring finger of the right hand, block the right nostril, and breathe in the left. Bring around to the side, breathe out. The right side blocked. Left side blocked. Right side blocked. Okay, so that was three. And then the last three are breathing in and out through both nostrils. Okay, do you all want to try that once more yourself? Okay, left hand, ring finger, block the left side. Okay, very good. Thank you all for participating. Now, with meditation, as you can see, there are different tools, different ways of doing it for different purposes. And what we have done so far, starting with the body scanning and the counting, and now the unblocking channels that might have some thoughts kind of stuck in there. Those are paving the way for what the real purpose of meditation is to become familiar with. Because once you've learned how to focus your mind and your body and your mind are relaxed, the real purpose of meditation is then to be able to use your mind to learn to review, become familiar with ideas. Okay. Any questions about meditation? Okay. All right. Whoops. Okay. Whoops. Oh, with the plan for tonight, starting with the meditation, review of last week, more about the mind, we're going to talk about samsara and rebirth, karma, non-virtuous actions, and purification. Okay. and we just did this. Now, that red star means that if you go to our website and you go to the Buddhism in a Nutshell class, you can download pages about this stuff to review at home. Okay, so last week we talked about, well, first of all, before we get started, I want to say that, you know, last week we really started talking about some very pretty difficult topics, you know, difficult translating from our Western minds to the Eastern meanings of things. Like, we talked about mind, definition of suffering and its causes. So we're going to review some of these things, and we're going to be continuing with some ideas that may be kind of foreign to you and profoundly different from Western faith streams or philosophies. But again, we invite you to try and listen with an open mind. You know, take these things as a theory, because the whole purpose of Buddhism is to try to deal with reality, of trying to think about what are the things in your mind that are causing you suffering and complications. How do we uncover those things? And hopefully, in this very brief introduction class, maybe you'll be introduced to a few terms that help you to name those things in your mind and to help you start to try to deconstruct them and start to resolve them. And then everything else, because this is a quick overview, there's going to be some terms and some ideas here that seem strange or difficult to understand. I try to compare this like when you're in elementary school and you're starting to learn arithmetic. Okay, you're just starting with some very simple numbers, and you just try your best to learn what a simple addition and simple subtraction is. And adults will tell you, well, later on, you're going to use this to multiply big numbers and to balance your checkbook and to figure out how much grass seed you need for your lawn. You know, like, it's hard to understand that these simple things can later on be used for more complex things. So we're going to be showing you some little glimpses of how to use the numbers to figure out how much grass seed you need for the lawn, you know, later on. So it might not make much sense now, but just listen to the ideas. Just take with you what makes sense to you, what might be a good tool. So that's what we invite you to do here in this very beginner class. Because each one of these things, the mind, samsara and rebirth, karma, non-virtuous actions, purification, each one of those things is a whole 5-week course in our real beginner class. So just remember, we're going to be really zooming through some things here. Okay. So last week we talked about the Four Noble Truths, which is the first teaching of the Buddha. And the Four Noble Truths, the first one is that suffering exists. And this includes physical suffering, but mostly refers to mental suffering. And some mental sufferings are obvious, and some are not so obvious. And the non-obvious are equally and possibly more harmful. We need to really look hard at ourselves. For example, we might think, oh, we really love our partner, or we really love our new car or something, and we feel really attached to it, you know, but we think, oh, I could live without it, but then let something go wrong with it and we just kind of go crazy, you know, so we don't realize that we're attached. So that's when it can be a problem. So why did the Buddha start with something that sounds so negative to have you think about suffering exists? It's because Buddhism is a very practical thing. It depends on you thinking about it in terms of your life and your reality and to really work at trying to understand it using your experience. And your first, he wants you to think about suffering, which really, I guess he says a better term for this is complications. Like, what are the complications in your mind? Start with your reality and study it. And that's why he used this as the first teaching, because he wants you to look at your own life. And how can you tell if you're still suffering? You know, maybe you think you've been working on becoming a better person and that you are really, and we are all really good people. We really are. We're all, just the fact that you're here feeling like you're making this effort to improve your life and improve your mind, you know that you're good people and you just want to try to be better. But, so suppose you think that you've perfected generosity. You know, you're a very generous person. Well, have you really perfected it? What if somebody asked you for your very last dollar? How do you feel? Have you really perfected generosity? You think you're patient? Would you get angry if somebody slapped you? You know, it's just that, you know, we sometimes feel like we have achieved something until we're tested on it. And it doesn't mean that you're a bad person if you fail the test. It just means you still need to work on it a little bit more. And the other point is our teachers are always telling us that do not be upset or think that you're less than you should be if you think that you're patient and you find yourself to be impatient. You're surrounded by impatient people because that is how you learn. If you don't know what your suffering is, then you can't fix it. So just accept it when it comes and say, oh, gee, that's a little bit more. I still need to work on that a little bit. And don't berate yourself for it. Be grateful that you've had the opportunity to find that out and have a chance to work on it. Okay. The second noble truth, suffering has a cause. Okay, so you think of what kind of complication you have in your mind. You go, oh, I was driving down the highway and somebody cut in front of me. I got really angry. You know, well, okay, well, why did you become angry? That's the first question that you start trying to become familiar with. What is the feeling that you had or the thought that you had? And what can you do to deconstruct that? Well, Buddhism says there are six root causes for afflictive emotions that cause this suffering, this complicated thought in your mind. That's ignorance. Okay, now ignorance, again, does not mean stupid. It means not recognizing things as they really exist. And that means that we are so prone to labeling things good or bad, happy or sad. You know, we kind of label things with extremes a lot. And we don't just stop and say, you know what? It just is. This moment is the result of a multiplicity of causes and conditions that came together and happened this way. So if there's something about this way that we feel should be different, well, let's think about what are the causes or conditions that made this happen and make the change. No need to say it's good or bad or making me angry or overexcited. Just look at it as it is. Attachment we defined as an exaggeration of the positive qualities of something, whether it's a person, a situation, or whatever. So with attachment, we tend to want to cling to it the way it is because we see all the positive qualities and not the negative. We don't want it to change. And that could be anything from a new car to our youth to a nice job that we might have or whatever. Okay, but attachment is trying to exaggerate the positive qualities and a desire to possess it. The next one, anger, is the opposite. It's an exaggeration of the negative qualities and wanting to be away from it at any cost, whether it hurts somebody or not. Pride, that's a pretty obvious. It's thinking of yourself as higher and greater than all others, to the detriment of others and yourself, really. You're expecting too much of yourself when you be too prideful. Doubt. Now, doubt here means it's kind of a lazy attitude. An example is, they say meditation is really helpful. And I tried it two or three times and it didn't work. I doubt that's the answer. Okay, so it's kind of like a lazy attitude toward testing something out. Okay. Healthy doubt, questioning something and studying it and testing it out is encouraged in Buddhism. It's not only encouraged, it's really pretty much a requirement if you're going to make these ideas your own. But the lazy doubt, you got to leave that behind. Wrong view, that would be something like, if I kill a goat and burn it, I will please the gods and I'm going to pass the test. Okay, it's an attitude that just is a wrong view. Okay. Now, all of these things are in the mind and can be changed. So going down the road and you're angry, because somebody cut in front of you, it's like, gee, why am I mad that he cut in front of me? I mean, maybe they're having a bad day or they're on the way to the hospital to have a baby delivered or, do I think I own the road? I've never done this, So you just kind of think about, what caused that thought and kind of deconstruct it. Okay. Third noble truth, suffering can be ended. Okay, and it's through using this processes of thinking, of reading, going to teachings, or whatever can give you information that can help you to identify and resolve these issues in your mind. And fourth, there is a way or a path to do so. And there are many different ways, formal and informal in Buddhism. Okay, so review mind. This is kind of, remember we said last week that it's very important to really try to leave your Western definitions out the door and try and understand what the Buddhist definition of mind is, which is mind, it has clearness and awareness, and its function is to know. Okay, so mind is not the brain. In the West, if anyone says, where's your mind? We all point to our heads, our brain. In Buddhism, the mind is what is non-physical. It's the consciousness inside of ourselves. And there's gross consciousness, which is what our active awarenesses every day. There's subtle consciousness that can be somewhat equated to like our intuition, that place inside of us that just kind of gets it through experience. And then there's the very subtle consciousness that is affected by our choices and our thoughts. And that's said to be the mind that continues from one life to another. And there is no separation of thought and emotion in mind. It's very common for a Westerner to say, I know I shouldn't get mad, but every time that happens, I just get angry. I can't help myself. I can't help that my feeling. That is totally not true in Buddhism, because every emotion is really connected to a thought. And we can, we've all had the experience, I'm sure, of sometime meeting somebody and, you know, just right off the bat, there's something you don't really like about them, you know, you just can't help yourself, you just don't like that person, you know, like, I don't know why, it just, something about them irritates me, you know. And then later on, you get to know them, and you find out some positive qualities. You know, they're actually a pretty smart person, really nice. Oh, we have a lot in common. And, you know, I didn't realize that they were just seeming that way because they were having a bad day or they weren't feeling well. And, you know, I think they're a really nice person. So from then on, every time you see that person, you go, oh, what a nice person that is. You know, so that emotion that originally was dislike, once you learn something about them, it changed your mind, it changed your emotion. So emotions are all connected to our minds and our attitudes. So the terms mind and consciousness are interchangeable but distinct from the brain, which is physical. The mind has two qualities, clearness and awareness, and its function is to know. It's important to remember that mind is continually changing. It's never the same 2 seconds in a row. And there's a firm belief in the ability to change our own minds and create the causes of happiness. Okay. So, are there any questions so far? No questions. Okay. I'm either bamboozling you or just a fantastic teacher. I'm kidding. Yes. It is, it's, you know, everything that we're saying here is possible, but none of it is easy. And so, maybe a place to start would be to think about what is it about what the person is saying or doing that is causing discomfort in your mind. And, you know, try and think about what can you do in your own mind to neutralize that. It is very difficult. Sometimes as a beginner, the only way we can protect ourselves is to try and stay away, but sometimes that is not possible. So all you can do is your best by practicing tools to calm yourself, to center yourself. When you feel like something on the outside is just taking you over, maybe you can just go to the side and take some deep breaths. Try some of this, the meditation of unblocking some of that negative energy. Okay? That may not be a very good or complete answer, but it's kind of tough to answer something like that without knowing the whole situation. And even if I knew it, I'm really not an expert. Okay. Okay, so now we're going to start a little transitioning into some new material here, and let's start with trying to connect what we've already learned with new things. All right, what is the connection between mind, rebirth, and karma? Now, a basic principle in Buddhism is that everything has a cause. Everything has a cause and an effect, and every effect has a cause, on and on and on, and back and back and back. The mind is non-physical, so it can only be produced by something that is non-physical. Each moment of mind is produced by the previous moment of mind, and this continuity of consciousness is the basis for Buddhist belief in rebirth and karma. Okay? So, our body, from being an adult, backward, was a teenager, a child, a toddler, a baby, a fetus, an embryo, and before that, I don't know, I'm not too good at biology or physics or whatever science is involved, but it was something else, okay? Physical always creates physical, and from now, I'm going to hopefully be an old person, and then I'll die, and I'll decompose, and maybe one day, I'll be a part of a new person. Who knows, okay? Or a flower or something else that's physical. But my mind, the mind I have now, came from the mind before. It's beginningless. That's a concept that really is impossible for our minds to really grasp. But logically, what would the beginning be? If every effect has a cause, where would the beginning be? So, theoretically, there is no beginning. And that's hard to understand, and that's one of what the Buddha called an unanswerable question. We don't really know what the beginning was, if there was a beginning. But logically, we have to say, until we have proof otherwise, there was no beginning, and there is no end. Because from this mind, we'll create another and another and another and another through eternity. Okay, so let's see. All right, rebirth. These are definitions from the SPMT. Remember I told you the SPMT Foundation for the Preservation of the Mahayana Tradition is our authority, our quality control people, okay? So I got these definitions and we'll talk about them a little bit here. So rebirth means it's a stream of subtle mind energy that is reestablished in a new body conditioned by the karmas of previous lives. Okay? So in my reading I found that actually, there is no word in the traditional Buddhist languages of Pali or Sanskrit, which is the first languages that the teachings of the Buddha were written down in, and from there were translated into English, German, Spanish, and all these different languages. So there's no word in the traditional Buddhist languages that exactly means rebirth or reincarnation. So this is our closest approximation to translation. Their word means more a passing from one life to another, or as a becoming again, or a becoming. It implies more of a continuous process rather than a start and a stop of birth and death. You know, when we think of rebirth, we think of being born, living, dying, starting over, born, living, dying, okay? But really, the term that we translate as rebirth is really a continuity from one stage to another. It's more continuous and smooth flowing. But we, as humans, kind of interpret it with the beginning and ending of a physical body, but that's not what it really, the idea that they're really trying to put across. And samsara means cyclic existence, the beginningless, recurring cycle of death and rebirth under the control of delusion and karma, fraught with suffering. Now that's a mouthful, isn't it? It's a mouthful. Okay, but that's it. Again, you know, as I explained at the beginning, we're going to be going through some terms that might sound very hard to understand or really weird, but each of these things, these ideas and definitions, take many explanations even to get the beginning of what they really are. So if it's blowing your brain, you know, just gloss over it, okay? But I will try to explain that the consciousness of your previous life not only affects the next surrounding objective or external world, but also generates the subjective image of the world. It creates its own reality. For example, take the case of twins, identical twins, same family, same mother, same womb, and yet we all know identical twins who are really different people, you know, different characteristics altogether, different personalities. Like, how can that be? Well, the Buddhist explanation would be, in a previous life, each of those twins had different different mindsets that influenced their minds and their attitudes. So when they came to this life, they already had those predispositions set in them. But the reason that they were born twins is they had a really strong karmic connection in some past life. You know, maybe they were mother and son or whatever. You know, that's all kind of weird ideas as well. You know, that might begin to make a little more sense to you once you've been studying and reading about Buddhism and all these other ideas for quite a few years. But I'm just throwing that out there for your entertainment, your thought. Okay. So, samsara, why do we just keep getting born back into a life with complications? So, like, why does that keep happening? Why does that keep happening? Well, you know, once I heard the saying, why does history repeat itself? Because we don't learn from it the first time. So, you know, we keep repeating our cycle of existence because there's still things we need to work on, and there's still things we need to work on. We might not have finished working on something in our mind, so we have to just keep working on it until we reach the state where we are free of these cycles that are determined by our actions. It's just throw us into this next life without a lot of control, and that's when you become a Buddha, when you have better control over your next lifetimes. Karma is a very big word that's thrown around in the West, and who knows what all people think it means. And maybe it's very often misused. Last week I was giving a presentation to a group of high schoolers, and in the class there was a student that had, somebody had just stolen $50 out of her purse in that class. And you know, she was really hot to trot. She was really upset about it. And here we're talking about karma, and she raised her hand and she says, "Does that mean whoever stole the $50 from my purse, they're going to get punished for it? You know, they're going to meet some bad experience because they stole?" So we use it as a tool against others often, you know, just saying they're going to get their due, but we don't often use it for ourselves. Like, you know, if we get stolen from, well, you know, maybe it's because in the past we stole from somebody else. Could have been in this or probably in some other life. But it means action. It's the working of cause and effect, whereby positive or virtuous actions produce happiness and negative or non-virtuous actions produce suffering. So let me read a little bit by our Lama Zopa Rinpoche, who is the head of the FPMT, has a little thing about karma. Here's what he has to say. Karma is the action of the mind, the intention that moves us toward an object, and which in turn creates verbal or physical actions. So it's our motivations. It's our mind that produces verbal or physical actions. There are three types of karma: virtuous, non-virtuous, and changeable, otherwise neutral. Virtuous karma always brings happiness, whereas non-virtuous karma, any action done with greed or hatred and ignorance, brings suffering. We can quite easily see this if we remain conscious of all our actions and check why we do the things we do. Then, through meditation and investigation, we can develop our wisdom and learn to control and destroy the negative impulses that arise and control us. Without that awareness, there's no way we can be in control. That is what the purpose of meditation is, okay? To try and bring those things to our awareness and then to try to control them, change them. Karma relates closely to the law of cause and effect that we see operating all the time in the natural world. Everything in the external physical world is a product of cause and effect. So it is illogical to think that the internal environment of the mind is any different. Just as the plant comes from the seed, so every experience of happiness and suffering comes from the imprints left on the mind from some previous action. Everything we say or do is determined by the intention behind the act. So everything comes from the mind, from the karmic seeds that are on our mind streams. Every aspect of the environment we were reborn into, our body, and the mind with all its propensities and emotions, all of this is completely the result of karma. Our present suffering is dependent on our previous karma, but our future happiness is dependent on our present karma, the motivation we have for all the actions we are doing now. So if we have sufferings now that are the result of some karma, some mind prints that were left behind from behind us, we just understanding that that is why we are suffering, that it's not just some random, or not just a random target, okay? There's a reason why we're in this situation. But the hope is knowing that you can recognize that and deal with it in a positive way and change it. Positive actions only come from positive motivations. If an action was motivated by a selfish mind, it is negative. If it was motivated by a generous, beneficial mind, it is positive. Therefore, in Buddhism, the main emphasis is on taking care of the mind, observing the mind, and keeping it pure. And, you know, in practical life, we all can think of times where people or situations, we've seen someone who, say, you know, got a terrible illness, and we think, oh my gosh, you know, like, that's a terrible thing. But amazingly, they one person might have the attitude, oh, you know, everything's terrible, you know, I'm just suffering, and, you know, and you think, wow, you know, what kind of a life is that person going to have? But then you see somebody else who might have a serious illness and say, you know, this illness was a real blessing to me. You know, I've come to realize that I have friends, people who are willing to help, that people are good, you know, that it's given me the time to sit and reflect about things that I never thought about before. You know, we all see the same kind of suffering in a person and different ways of dealing with it. And then you look at the results of those people's situation with those different mindsets, you know, how other people react to them, how happy or unhappy they are, you know, how they are able to deal with things. So maybe a little glimpse of to how we can control what the level of happiness that we have from this moment on, even if we are in difficult situations. By viewing our difficult situation in a different way, we can create happiness, or we could create more suffering. There was an amazing teacher of many by the name of Venerable Robina Corton, who comes here to teach every once in a while. She's going to be coming again, I think, in March of 2016. So if you see that happening around, I really encourage you to try and come and hear her, because she says something about karma that I have the time and I'd like to share with you. So Venerable Robina, here's what she has to say about karma. Words are thoughts, and thoughts are karmas, and karmas are what produce us. Buddha talks about the law of karma. All it means is everything we think, do, and say produces me. That's it. That's all it means. Compare that to the dualistic view we have now. All I am is this lump of something that someone plucked here on earth to whom things happen. And I'm a victim necessarily. We don't mind being the victim of good things, but bad things, we agonize, oh, why do bad things happen to me? And never agonize about why good things happen to me. We're irrational about it. What we mean is we don't like bad things happening to us. Join the club. But the question why is an incredibly good question. It's actually the very question. And part of the suffering we have here on earth is that we cannot get an answer. We don't know why, and that's the anguish of so much of our suffering. We can't get past asking why bad things happen to me or why bad things happen to this world. We can't get past the pain, can't get to the point of accepting this is what's happening. If you're a devoted Christian, you'll accept it as God's will, and you can get past it that way. It's a technique, a tool, and a way you can get past this experience, and it gives you courage. If you're a materialist, there's no answer. That's why we have to look out there to find the blame. So, of course, you blame your mommy to your daddy, your rapist, your mean husband. We also blame people for making us happy as well, but we don't mind that. Why are you happy, Robina? Oh, because Fred gave me $100. And that's where attachment comes in, because I need someone out there to make me happy. But suffering? Why are you suffering, Robina? Because Fred punched me. So this is the dualistic view we have. I am this victim that things happen to, they got plunked on this earth, and we assume it's the truth. We don't have to learn it. It's in our bones. Buddha says it's the way ego thinks. The dualistic sense that I'm nothing and nobody, but I'm this thing that things happen to. It's the way we experience the world. So to hear the Buddha say that everything we say and think is the main cause of what I will become, that what I am now and what happens to me, the main cause of it is what I did, it's a very new concept to us. Because the instinctive belief we have is exactly the opposite. And because we come from the point of view of victim, the way we hear that is as punishment. Are you saying I'm the blame? We can't help but hear it this way because we have this dualistic view of victim and oppressor. Blame, punishment. We got that. Don't blame the nuns for it. You came with it. Don't blame your Jewish mommy. That's the view of ego. Buddha's view, it's all based on the view that your mind is not physical, and whatever goes on inside it is karma. And karma refers to whatever your mind does. It's So I'll just read one more. So that's why it's useful to use a simple example of playing music or football. But the Buddha is dealing with happiness and suffering, morality and immorality. But the principle of why you are good at things when it comes to piano, we get this. Why are you good at piano, Rabina? Why, I practiced it for 10 years. We get this. You know very well you've filled your mind with music for years. You're not surprised you're good at it. But we have this very different set of rules when it comes to our emotions. Morality, as we call it. We think of morality in a dualistic way. We think of it as somebody up there putting on a bunch of do this and don't do that. Think about it. Buddha has no concept of blame and punishment and reward. This idea of what you think and do and say produces you and your experiences today, tomorrow, this life, and the next one. But this is a natural law. He didn't make it up. He observed it. It's like a natural law, like gravity. So I hope that was helpful to you. So basically in karma, you know, this view that we produced ourselves is, compare it to the more common view that we've all heard and probably have felt and said ourselves, I didn't ask to be born. He did that to me. Why did this happen to me? Okay? So, you know, we think of ourselves as victims. And, you know, I know I've said many times when I was, you know, in my lifetime, I didn't ask to be born. What am I doing here? But many times I'm glad I'm here. Okay. Any questions? This is a lot of stuff to think about, isn't it? Okay. We'll go over these next things rather quickly, but I wanted you to be introduced to it. The four laws of karma. Okay, karma is definite. As we just said, virtuous actions and or intentions always produce happiness, and non-virtuous actions or intentions or thoughts always produce suffering. Okay, that's easy to get, right? The second one, karma expands over time. And what could that possibly mean? I'm not experienced enough to give you an answer that I can say with definite authority, but my interpretation from what I've read and learned, it might be, for an example, say, tell a little lie. Oh, it's just a little lie. Well, isn't it easier the next time to just say another little lie? Or maybe you've got to say another little lie to cover the first little lie? And then the third little lie is a little bigger? And then somebody hears that lie and believes it, and then you've got to change your situation to accommodate the lie, and then you're too deep in the lie to, like, tell the truth. You know, so my interpretation is that's one way in which this is expressed, of karma expands over time. Same way, but on the other side, a little kindness. You know, one day you just kind of, like, hold the door for somebody. And it's just what that other person needed. And it just makes their day. It's like somebody held the door for me. So they're going to go and they're going to hold the door for somebody else or, you know, help someone across the street. And that person that they helped, oh, wow, it just made such a difference to them. They're going to go and do another kindness. And so this expands and expands. You've probably heard stories about, you know, one person paid the toll for somebody else, and then 25 people back keep passing it on and on and on. So a little thought, intention can really, positive or negative, it's a little ripple that can get bigger and bigger and bigger and really affect a lot of things. Third, you cannot experience the result without creating the cause. That's really tough sometimes when you're going through something really difficult. You know, it's, oh, gosh, you know, how did I get myself into this situation? Well, I'm in this situation now. What can I do to make it change? Is there something in my mind, an attitude that I can twist around? Can I look around at the causes and conditions, the multiplicity of causes and conditions that put me in this spot? Is there one of those causes or conditions that I can influence, change a little bit to make it a little easier, to give me a positive attitude? Because then if I can, you know, Leonard Cohen has this song, everything has a crack. That's how the light gets in. You know, is there some little crack that I can find that can let in some light and make the situation a little more positive? And four, karma is never lost. Actions always produce a result unless the karmic imprints are purified or destroyed, exhausted. Okay, so that means that if you had to produce a negative karma, once you experience the results and don't create more negative karma, then you've used it up. On the other hand, positive karma that you've created and you're experiencing, unless you create more positive karma, you've used it up. So that means we have to keep working on creating more and more of the positive karma. And the way to do that is to try to remove the negativities in our mind so we don't accidentally or on purpose produce more negative karma. Questions? It's a brain full, isn't it? Okay, the four aspects of karma. We're really going to race through this because this is kind of complicated, but many people ask about or wonder about these things. So there's the ripening result, which is the karma that determines what type of rebirth that will take, whether it'll be human, animal, whatever. And these are really, can be really weird and advanced thoughts. So, you know, let it go if it sounds crazy to you. Then there's the possessed result, which determines what kind of environment that we're born into, whether we're going to be here in the West or in a war-torn country. Experiencing the result similar to the cause, you're robbed because you stole. And creating the result similar to the cause, you steal because you stole. That's your tendency. That's what you're good at. You practiced it. So those tendencies are things that we really need to struggle against. So I'm going to just leave that behind. Okay. Here's a little cartoon. If you can't read it, it says, if you think about it, we must have done something pretty bad in a past life. And these are dung beetles. So just a little funny thing. Okay. On to the 10 non-virtuous actions. In many other faiths, you have something like the 10 commandments. You will never find that in Buddhism. There are never any rules or directives, okay? The Buddha just tells you the way it is, and then it's up to you to think about it and apply it to your life. So if you wanted the 10 non-virtuous actions, as we talked about, negative karma, negative always has negative results. So these are some of the negative non-virtuous actions. If you do these, you are going to suffer. It's up to you. You can choose to do it or not. He's not going to command you to. He's just giving you the information. This is the natural law. So there's three non-virtuous actions of body: killing, stealing, and sexual misconduct. For speech, lying, speaking harshly, slander, which is also divisive speech, or gossip, idle speech. Three of mind, covetousness, ill will or anger, and wrong views. So it's kind of self-explanatory. Any questions about this? Yes. Wrong view is sort of like what we talked about before, where because you don't make the effort to really think about all the consequences of things, you might think that the right view is to kill a goat and burn it to the gods so that you'll pass the test. Okay. Or it's okay to kill someone if you know they're trying to take your property or you don't like them. Okay, so those are wrong views. Okay, so there are two things. Okay, karma, as we talked about, is cause and effect, cause and effect, cause and effect. Okay, it's kind of a steady stream. But there are two things, only two things, that can change karma. And one is anger. Anger can immediately destroy a whole lot of positive karma. And you think about it, you could be a really wonderful person, you know, being generous and kind and happy and wonderful all week long, and then one day something happens to make you so angry, and it just takes over your whole mind and just floods all that good stuff out. So you really have to work hard to change those angry thoughts to get back to ground zero of your positive thoughts. It's something that can change your positive mind very quickly and completely. So it's really important to try to recognize and resolve those things that cause an angry mind. But the other thing is purification. And most faith systems have some form of this, a confession or whatever, but this, in Buddhism, it's a little different in that here the four things in which you can reduce or eliminate negative karma or negative thoughts in your mind are, first, regret. And that means recognize what you did wrong. Okay, what did I do that was a negative thing? It's different from guilt. Regret is looking at a negative thing with a positive mind. That's what our Geshe has been saying, okay? And if, when you think about it, guilt is thinking about a negative thing with a negative mind. Oh, I did that bad thing. I'm so worthless. There's nothing I can do to change it. No, I'm a bad person. And oh, I wish I could change it. That's guilt, right? It's totally non-productive. But regret, if you think about something that you did wrong and say, you know, I should have done it that way. I accept that I was not very skillful when I did that thing or said those words. Okay, then what can you do? Well, the reliance can be at the beginning or the end. I mean, the order of these can vary, but reliance means to choose a way to think about this. And in Buddhism, we say, okay, well, I'm going to rely on the laws, the teachings that the Buddha put forth on this. I'm going to use that kind of a logic to figure this out. Okay, you have to choose one way of thinking about something, because if you try to think about this, and how would the Buddha deal with this versus, you know, the Christian God way to deal with it, it would get too confusing. So choose a way, a mindset on how to think this out. This is reliance on the Dharma of this philosophy of thinking. So if you're using this philosophy of thinking, well, then the next thing you do is try and find a remedy. You know, if you said something that hurt somebody, Well, what can you do to fix that? Well, maybe you can go and apologize. Maybe you can go and say different words or bring them something or whatever. You know, think of some way to remedy it. There may not be a way to remedy it. So then you just try to let it go by doing the next thing in all cases is resolve not to do it again. And if you can do all these steps sincerely, then it is said that it will eliminate or erase that negative karma, that negative seed in your mind. So if this is used to admit and then let go of our mistakes in a positive way, instead of just tormenting ourselves forever with our unfortunate common use of guilt, which is totally not only non-productive, but it's harmful. Well, we've gotten to the end of what we're filling our brain with tonight. Are there any questions on what we talked about tonight? Okay. So next week there's no class because next Tuesday is a holy day. Okay. So if you forget and you come anyway, there's still something that you can participate in. There's some of these bulletins out on the front desk that you can take, and it explains it's an auspicious Buddha day, Labab Duchin. Okay, and let's see, at 7 p.m. they're doing a Shakyamuni Buddha Puja, and the Puja is a prayer service. So if you're new to Buddhism and you're curious about what some of the rituals might be, so this is a prayer service, then please come and just see what that's like. Okay, you're more than welcome to do that. So the next class is going to be the following Tuesday. We have two more classes left, the 10th and the 17th. Okay? And next week, of course, we'll try to review what we did tonight. And we'll talk about precious human rebirth, the Buddhist view of death, the three scopes, and the three principal aspects of the path. Self-explanatory, aren't they? Kind of strange. It's a tease. So you'll have to come to find out what those things are. Okay. Let's see if there's anything I've missed. Okay. Remember that there are handouts on the website. There are books available here in the bookstore. And remember, we talked about generosity, how everything that is here is 100% the result of our volunteers and the generosity of people who come before us. The reason I can be standing here in front of you is because people before me had the incredible generosity and patience to create a center that I could go to and learn these amazing things and send for incredible teachers and bring them here. So, you know, Matt Damon had a nonprofit, and he was talking about how he would prefer that 1 million people give $1 each than for one person to give $1 million. Because that means that 1 million people invested in that idea. So maybe you were all here because you are wanting to invest in your own minds and hearts and lives. Maybe this is not where you want to make your investment. Think about if it's valuable enough that you're making an effort toward it by investing something of yourself, whether it's some time, because we have many volunteer opportunities here at the center, or maybe just a little bit of you know, a few dollars, or whatever it is that you can give to, in, you're making an investment in your own self. So just think of it in that way. But of course, you know, if you cannot do that, there's no obligation. It's just an attitude that you of saying that something is important to you. Okay? Hope I said that well. Okay. So, handouts and links, again, it's right here, and you can join the email list. Again, that the information about joining the email list, I think, is here on the bulletin, and there's some extras there. So let's dedicate all our efforts toward having more peaceful minds and hearts, compassion for ourselves and for all sentient beings. Thank you all for investing your time being here tonight on this rainy day. Thank you very much for coming. If you have any questions, I will be here. Good night. Be safe going home. And I'll see you in 2 weeks here on Tuesday the 10th.